Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name, your name.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K.com. Our guest tonight is Elizabeth Krohn, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, how about diving right into the interview? I know you read and you loved the book, and you probably have plenty of questions for our guest.
I do, and Elizabeth Greenfield Krohn was a wife and mother of two young boys when she was struck by lightning in the parking lot of her Houston synagogue, and her most fundamental understanding of what the world is and how it works were completely transformed. She's now a grandmother living in Houston, Texas, and she's the co-author with Dr. Jeffrey Kripal of Changed in a Flash, One Woman's Near-Death Experience, and Why a Scholar Thinks It Empowers Us All. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth. It's a pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I know you've probably had to tell the story many times over, but you know, many NDEers describe how their experience transformed their life. And in your case, it's so striking because, you know, it literally changed in a flash. So perfect title. So before we get started, could you please give our listeners a brief overview of your experience so we get a flavor of what we're talking about here?
Yeah, I'll be happy to. Just interrupt me and stop me when I need to stop talking because I get going on this and I kind of lose track of time.
I know.
And you said, you know, that I have to tell this story again. The way I see it, I get to tell the story again. It's such a pleasure to talk about it now after not saying anything about it for almost 30 years. And it's almost like I can't shut my mouth now. It's all I ever talk about.
Yeah.
So what happened to me was, you have to understand the type of person I was before this happened. I was very, very skeptical of anything like near-death experiences or past lives. I basically thought that was just, you know, a joke. And maybe that's why it happened to me. I don't know. But I was taking my two young children, I had two at the time, to synagogue on a Friday evening, and we pulled into the parking lot, and it had been a very sunny day, and suddenly, I mean, really out of nowhere, this enormous storm came. It was this huge, it got very dark, and there was lightning, and the rain was coming down in sheets, and lots of thunder. And I didn't want to sit in the car and wait because we were late for services. And so I didn't want to miss services because they were going to be reading my grandfather's name. It was the first anniversary of his death. And so that was the reason we had gone to services in the first place. My husband was out of town on business, and so I told my four-year-old son to, I was going to unbuckle him and let him run to the building and to wait for me under the awning. And he did that, and I watched him, and he made it just fine. And then I climbed over the seat of the car into the back seat, and I unbuckled my two-year-old from his car seat, and I opened the door, and we got out. And I had an umbrella in my left hand, and I had been thinking I was going to carry my two-year-old son, but I was trying to juggle too much. I had my purse and the umbrella, and I put him down and just held his hand with my right hand, fortunately. And we took a few steps, and it was like suddenly the air just chilled. It had been a very warm day, and it was very warm and muggy. And if you've ever been to Houston, you know what I'm talking about. It's like trying to breathe underwater, the humidity here. But it got very cool. And as soon as that happened, I looked at my hand holding the umbrella, and I had time to think, well, this isn't very smart. I shouldn't be doing this. Because look at that, my wedding ring is touching the metal shaft of the umbrella. And as soon as I thought that, I thought to myself, let go. Just let go of the umbrella, and it was too late. The lightning had struck, and I immediately fell to the ground, unconscious, and my two-year-old was screaming because the lightning strike had burst his eardrums, and I didn't know that's why he was screaming, apparently it was very painful. And my four-year-old witnessed the whole thing, and he ran back toward us and took his brother and started dragging him toward the building. And they got to the building, and people started asking them why they were screaming, and I thought I was inside the building with them. I thought I had followed them to the building. I thought I was still walking, and we got inside the lobby, and I thought, wait a minute, where's my umbrella, and why are the boys screaming? And so I looked back outside. I looked out the window to see where my umbrella was, and sure enough, it was out there in the parking lot. It was smoking, and it was like the skeleton of an umbrella. And my gaze kind of shifted to the right, and there was this heap on the concrete there, on the pavement. And I realized it was me out there in a heap. And it was so... I don't know. It was just so disconcerting to see myself out there. I thought I was fine. I mean, I thought, okay, I'm wet, but at least I'm okay. But then I see myself out there, and one of my first thoughts was, what I saw was my feet sticking out of the bottom of my shoes. And I got really upset about that because I was wearing brand new shoes that were ridiculously expensive. And I had never spent that kind of money on a pair of shoes before. And still to this day, I don't think I've spent that kind of money on another pair of shoes. And I was really upset about the shoes. And so I looked down at my feet there in the lobby where I thought I was standing just to see if my shoes were really gone, and they were fine, perfectly intact. They were perfect. The only problem was I was not touching the ground. My feet were hovering a few inches off the ground, and I thought, well, this is really, really weird. And by now, a man that knew who my kids were had come over and asked them why they were screaming, and one of them pointed out at me, and he ran into services, and from the back of the room, services had already begun, from the back of the room, he said, I need a doctor. And being about two blocks from the Texas Medical Center, which is enormous, and being a huge Jewish congregation, about 40 men got up and rushed toward the back of the congregation, back of the synagogue. Meanwhile, I had decided that my children were safe, and I knew my entire family was there at services since it was the anniversary of my grandfather's death. We had all planned to be there. So I thought, well, I'm just going to go back outside and see what the deal is here because I don't understand this. And I kind of floated back out to where my body lay there on the pavement. And I'm looking down, and I was, like, willing myself to get up. And I was thinking, get up. You're never going to get the stains out of your suit, you know. And I wasn't moving. And then it dawned on me that I wasn't moving because I was dead. And I thought, well, okay. That was a waste. That was a waste of 28 years. I was 28 years old. Because clearly you didn't learn anything. You were wrong about everything. And I was quite beating myself up for not believing in any type of afterlife or anything like that before that very moment. And at that point, I decided, okay, I'm going to just kind of go with this and see where it takes me. And there was kind of a light, a glow. It wasn't like a solid light. It was more like just a hazy glow to my right and up. And I knew that it was like beckoning me, and it was like a beacon. It wanted me to follow it. And so I did. I followed this light, and it led me to a garden. And when I say garden, I don't mean a garden like we have here on Earth, or at least not one that I've seen. And I've seen a lot of gardens because I love gardens. This was otherworldly. It was beyond description beautiful. And the reason I can't describe it is because the words just don't exist. It's so frustrating to me. You know, people will ask me, well, what did the flowers look like? Or what color were they? Or what did it smell like? Well, I can't answer the questions because the words don't exist. The vocabulary just isn't here. And I don't know if it's because I'm just not smart enough and I don't know the right words, or maybe we're not supposed to be describing it exactly the way it is.
Yeah. Well, of course, the you know, many of your fellow near-death experiencers, you know, say that it's the same thing, that it's ineffable. You know, you can't put these experiences into physical terms. But there are several questions I wanted to ask you about the garden. So we're going to it's a wonderful encapsulation of your experience. We're going to go to a quick break. And we come back, we have a lot to talk about. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes with Elizabeth Crone. And the book is Changed in a Flash.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love knows no death. A groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook could be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest this evening is Elizabeth Krohn. Our sponsor tonight is the Comlock Center, and they could be found on the web at comlock.com. Bob?
And we're back with Elizabeth. The book has changed in a flash. And when we, before we went to break, you told us a wonderful account of entering a garden. Obviously, nothing that you could explain in physical terms. But what struck me in reading the account in the book was that one thing that you did notice in the garden was that everyone appeared to be accompanied. People were walking around in pairs, which I found really interesting. The implication is that we all have some guidance or assistance in this other this world to come. I mean, is that your take?
That is absolutely my take. I think everything while I was there was tailored to put me at ease. And I think it's like that for everyone that goes there. And part of being at ease is having a loving, caring presence meet you and stay with you and help you through this so that you're not frightened. And another tremendous kindness, at least for me, was everyone looked young and beautiful and healthy. It was unbelievable. I was only 28 years old, but when I looked at my own hand, it looked like I was 16 or 18 years old, the skin on my hand. So I think that although we were all in the same place, we were all seeing our own version of heaven. My version of heaven at that time would have been a garden, because that's where I would have been the happiest and the most comfortable. So I believe that's why I saw a garden. There might have been someone else I saw there who thought we were in a forest because he loved forests. You know, I don't know. But I think that the same holds true for why we were all paired up. Go ahead.
You know, well, the other thing that made that I thought about after reading your account was that so many people, if not all, even though they might not be in a condition to tell us about it, you know, have deathbed visions or, you know, these end-of-life experiences where they're visited by a deceased loved one or a loving presence, you know, ostensibly to assist them make the transition. So I started to think, might these be the same companions that continue with us after we pass, like you saw in the garden?
It could be. I don't know. You know, that's really more of a question for Jeff Kreisel.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be able to answer that better than I can. All I know is exactly what I experienced. And for me, it was the person, not person, but the being that met me there was my grandfather,
mm-hmm.
or so I thought.
Right.
And so it was very comforting to me. My grandfather was French and had a heavy French accent when he was alive. And so I knew that that's who it was because I knew his voice and I knew his accent. However, after sitting there on this bench in the garden with him, I started to realize it wasn't actually my grandfather. It actually was God. And he had come to me in a way that would put me at ease. And that was by presenting himself as my grandfather. At least that's what I believe.
Right.
And that's what I think happened.
Yeah. Let's talk about you had a choice, as many experiences also describe, to stay in this mm-hmm. beautiful, comfortable place or return to the physical realm. So mm-hmm. you was this... Was this truly a choice, and what influenced your decision?
It truly was a choice, and I truly did not want to come back.
Okay.
You just can't even imagine a place so perfect. But I was given a lot of information, and I was given a lot of time to ask questions and to make a decision, and he told me he would help me make the decision as to whether or not to stay or come back. And what finally made me decide to come back were two pieces of information that I was given. The first was that I would be having a third child if I came back, and that it would be a girl. I already had two boys. It would be a girl, and that she had already selected me as her mother. So that right there, it was just a given that reincarnation exists. It was just, you know, everything I learned there, I didn't learn it over a period of time. It was like an instantaneous download of information. It was like I got there, and then I knew everything. I knew, I understood that reincarnation really happens. So I was told that I would have a daughter, and I was also told that I would be facing a divorce if I came back. So a lot of people say, then why would you come back? Why, you know, why would you leave such a perfect place to come back only to go through a divorce, which is no fun? And my reason was my children. If I didn't come back, I knew that my ex-husband would be raising our children, and I didn't want that. And I wanted to meet this daughter. I really was curious and wanted to meet her. And I figured if she's already gone to all the trouble to select me, and I was told, don't let that make your decision for you, because if you don't go back, it's fine. She'll pick someone else. She's already decided to come back. It doesn't have to be you. So there was no pressure to come back, but I did decide ultimately, obviously, to come back.
Right.
And I was told once I made my decision that it would be very painful coming back, that I had burns on my body that were due to the lightning, and it was going to be very physically painful. And I said, okay. And he told me that he was going to help me back into my body, and that he was going to have to squeeze me very tight, like painfully tight, bone-crushingly tight, to get my expanded soul back into my body. Because being out of my body, my soul had just expanded to take up all this space, and now he had to squeeze me back in, and it was very, very painful coming back.
And you returned with a very strong and accurate ability, for lack of a better term, you know, to recognize future events. How did you assimilate this into your physical life? And was it disturbing, or is it something you embraced?
I did not embrace it at all. I hated it. Because the events that I was told about, they were all tragedies, that, you know, tragic plane crashes and earthquakes. And nobody gave me lottery numbers. You know, they were giving me plane crash information. And I didn't at all know what to do with it. I was extremely upset. I was afraid to go to sleep at night, because usually this information would come to me in nightmares. And my husband was not, I don't want to say he wasn't supportive, but he didn't understand, and neither did I. I mean, who could understand that I would wake up on October 15th, 1989 and say, there's going to be an enormous earthquake in the San Francisco Bay Area, and then to be watching the news 2 days later on October 17th, and there it's happening. You can't understand it. I couldn't understand it, and he certainly didn't understand.
Yeah.
So I pretty much stopped talking about it. To him. I did tell my mom each time I had one of these nightmares, and she was actually a little bit fascinated by it. And, you know, I didn't know what to do with it for 30 years. I knew I couldn't call the FAA and say, hey, you know, I think this plane is going to crash, because, you know, they'd be knocking on my door. How did you know that plane was going to crash? What did you do to it?
How do you interpret this? I mean, you received, as you described, this instant download of information. Mm-hmm. Not only information, but teachings and so forth. So
right.
Do you think that this information about future events was downloaded then, or was it a matter of that, you know, this lightning flash, you know, could have triggered, you know, or enhanced your innate psychic ability. So when you had the premonition of the earthquake, do you think that was something that was downloaded when you were in the garden, or just something that you picked up just before the earthquake?
It was not something that was downloaded in the garden.
Okay.
I believe that I was getting this information on these tragedies because I wasn't doing what I needed to be doing. And each time it was like kicking me in the rear saying, wake up. You know, you have information. You need to be sharing the information. Wake up. And I think at first, it took me a long time to realize that I think it was happening because I had to prove to myself that it was really happening. I had to prove to myself that I actually did know about that earthquake before it happened, or I actually did know about the TWA flight in 1996 before it happened. And once I started to believe that I was actually doing that, it really confirmed for me that there is an afterlife. I was there. I was actually there. I mean, I had been such a skeptic. It took me convincing myself that it actually happened and that I was actually there.
Yeah.
And this is how it was proven to me.
Yeah, and of course, 30 years ago, you didn't have this proliferation of information and media portrayals and
right.
No wonder that you wouldn't talk about it because you were afraid of being labeled, as being nuts, right?
I was more afraid of what it would do to my children. I was afraid they would be labeled as children of the crazy mother,
right,
and that it would affect their social lives, and I didn't want that. And no, there was no internet. There was no way for me to research what was happening to me.
Yeah, and so many things are outlined in the book and Changed in a Flash about these, how you documented these premonitions,
mm-hmm.
and I guess that's one of the reasons that you hooked up with Jeffrey Kripal, and as to get substantiation, or sort of personal proof that what you were experiencing was real, right? You had somebody
right.
to document it, yeah.
Exactly.
So tell us about the phone call you received in 1990 from your grandfather.
Okay. So that happened, I guess it was about, it was in the spring of 1990. So it was a year and a half after I had been struck by lightning. And I was newly pregnant with my daughter. And at 3:30 in the morning, the phone rang, and it was on my side of the bed. It was a landline. People used to have those. And I didn't want to answer the phone because nobody calls you at 3:30 in the morning to give you good news. And so I didn't want to hear whatever it was. It was going to be bad news. And my husband kept hitting me and pushing me, saying, wake up, you have to get the phone. So I finally did. I said hello, and it was my grandfather, French accent and all. And by now, my husband and I are both sitting up in bed, and my husband is saying to me, who is it? And I'm shushing him. I'm ignoring him and, kind of brushing him off. And I didn't want to tell him who it was, I said, I have some real exciting news to tell you. And he said, well, I already know that you're pregnant, and it's a girl, just like you were told it would be, and I didn't actually know that yet. And he told me that this phone call was taking a tremendous amount of energy on his part, and that he needed me to give my mom a message. This was my mom's father. And I said, well, why don't you call her? Why are you calling me? And he said, well, I've tried to talk to her, but she can't hear me. And ever since the lightning strike, you can hear me. So please give her this message. And he proceeded to tell me, it was just a piece of information about, I think it was where something was located. It was not a real meaningful thing to me. And I told him I would tell her. And his voice started getting faint. And I begged him not to hang up. Meanwhile, my husband is really harassing me now. Who is it? Who is it? Who is it? And I'm ignoring him. And my grandfather said, I need you to remember that feeling of unconditional love that you had when you were in the garden. Never forget it, because you'll feel it again as soon as we hang up, but you won't feel it again after that until the next time you're here. And as soon as he hung up, he did tell me he would call me again. I was very upset that we were hanging up. And as soon as we hung up, our bedroom filled with some kind of, I call it smoke because it looked like smoke, but there was no odor to it. It was just a dense cloud. It was just like water vapor. And it was so thick, I mean, you could hardly see your hand in front of your face. And I think at any other time, if our bedroom had filled with smoke, my husband and I would have been panicked and running to get our kids out of the house. But we weren't. We were just sitting there in the bed. And we weren't frightened. And the way our bed was situated, you could see all the way down the hall. And at the very end of the hall, I saw a bright red laser light, like a laser pointer light at the end of the hall. And that light had that unconditional love in it that I had felt in the garden. It just, you know, I have children and I know what unconditional love is because I have children. But this unconditional love that I felt in the garden and that I felt again when I saw that light, it's a completely different level. And again, I just don't have the vocabulary to describe it.
Well, you did a pretty good job of it. It's a wonderful story. We have to go to break. We're talking with Elizabeth Crone. The book is called Changed in a Flash, One Woman's Near-Death Experience and Why a Scholar Thinks It Empowers Us All. We have a lot more to talk about. We're going to go to a short break, so stay with us.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death, and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, we have been talking to Elizabeth Crone. Our sponsor is the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. We want to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for all the latest events and happenings. And this month, we have coming up free on May 11th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, and that would be from 11 to noon Pacific time, and anything you want to figure out in between, our Visionary Explorers group meets online. And also on May 11th from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern, our Miami Afterlife discussion group meets. Our May 22nd webinar, The History of the Rhine, will be presented by Executive Director of the Rhine Research Center, John Kruth. Beginning with an exploration of mediumship, founder J.B. Rhine created the first structured laboratory to test psychic abilities. If you are psychic or interested in the topic, this is the webinar for you. Starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, the final part of the webinar will include live questions and answers. And for our listeners tonight, we have a limited number of free member-only seats using the code RHINE2019, and RHINE is spelled R-H-I-N-E. And for non-members, we have half-price seating using code KRUTH2019, and that's KRUTH, K-R-U-T-H. Our annual Holiday of the Earth raffle winners were drawn on Earth Day. They are Carol B. from Michigan, Elisa C. from Florida, Andrew M. from Virginia, Kathleen S. from New York, and Anita C. from the Bahamas. Please do not call the office winners or contact it directly to preserve the integrity of the readings. We send out a great big thank you to everyone who entered. This is how we pay our bills, and we are forever grateful for your support. The annual Summer Grief Retreat, Love Knows No Death, is open for enrollment with early bird rates set to expire on May 25th. Be sure to grab one of the 50 seats to this great weekend where attendees work in small groups with certified mediums Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, Siri Bernstein, and Joseph P. Scheel, along with Dr. Mohanna and a caring staff of facilitators assisting in transforming your grief. This special weekend is scheduled for July 26th through 28th in Chester, Connecticut, where you will learn that the mystery of death is not a mystery at all, but a doorway to another chapter of continuing life. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great not-for-profits. And follow us on our YouTube channel for great stories and videos at youtube.com/afterlifeeducation. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Elizabeth Crone. The book, which is a good one, Changed in a Flash, One Woman's Near-Death Experience and Why a Scholar Thinks It Empowers Us All. Elizabeth, we were talking a bit about reincarnation and how you came, because of your experience, to know that that reincarnation is real. What are your thoughts? Do we have a choice about whether or not to reincarnate?
I think we have a choice as to when we reincarnate. I think that we, my personal belief is that we have to do it until we, I don't know how to say it other than to say graduate or finish. It's kind of like we're in school here and we have to get through all of this learning. So how quickly we do it is kind of up to us, you know. I don't think there's a set amount of time that has to pass between lives. It's just a matter of, I don't know what it's a matter of, actually.
Yeah.
Personal decision, I guess. I don't know.
Free will, I guess, on both sides. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, so we have to be, I'm sure you're open to the possibility that you being struck by lightning might have been part of a design that was predetermined before this physical incarnation.
Absolutely. Part of what I learned in the massive download that I got while I was there was the fact that time is not linear. Time is a funny thing. And I don't know if you read, actually, my very favorite chapter in our book is the postscript at the end, where I had a dream, and I dreamt that I was someplace with Jeff Kripal.
Yeah, I did read.
And we were talking to someone, and I was able to describe him and what our conversation was, and I described where we were. I knew the street corners, that I saw the street signs, and I emailed all of that to Jeff, and he responded, and he said, "You just described my little tiny hometown in Nebraska." And he said that was my grandfather that you were talking to. And he forwarded my email to a colleague of his, Eric Wargo, who at the time was working on a book called Time Loops. And Eric responded and said, "Hey, Jeff, have you ever thought of the fact that possibly and probably you and Elizabeth had this designed before either of you were even born? Like, this was a plan in place to have happen." I don't know. It kind of freaks me out to think about it, but I think it makes sense given my new understanding of time and space. You know, I never studied physics in school, so it was all very foreign to me, but it does make sense to me now that would be the case.
And of course, there is a theory that past, present, and future are all happening simultaneously. And there's also the theory that, you know, when you're getting this information about a future event, you know, the question is, are you seeing the actual event, or are you seeing an email or a newspaper headline about the event? You know, I mean,
right?
So many questions. But I know one thing that you talk about is that you came to the realization that nothing is black and white, which sounds simple, but there's more to it. I mean, I guess from your experience, nothing is linear, right? Everything flows.
Everything flows, and it flows in every direction. It doesn't just flow forward or backward. It flows up and down in every direction. I mean, the dimensions are endless, and no, everything is not black and white. It's so complex. And, you know, as I was lying in that parking lot, looking down at my body from above, I saw that my white suit had totally turned gray. I was wearing a black and white suit, and the black and white suit was now black and gray. And it just, it was like, I just understood suddenly. Everything is not right or wrong or dead or alive. There really is no death. There's a continuation of consciousness on some level. And I have to say that that's what I've taken away from all of this, most of all, is that it has taken away my fear of death. And that, to me, is what's so empowering. That's a very empowering thing, not to have that fear of death.
Absolutely. And it's important to, as you mentioned, to talk about it, because others need to know, you know, some of the information that you learn. You know, Dr. Kripal suggests that, you know, our contemporary near-death experiences are our own mystics and seers. You know, and I would agree with that to a certain degree. I don't know if you feel that way, or you think you have a responsibility, but it's sort of part of the information that you received. See it as, well, do you feel you have an obligation
not so much an obligation as a privilege. I feel like it gives me such gratification when I talk to someone, and this is just in the last 3 or 4 years where I've been able to do this, where I've come to terms with it, where I can talk to someone, and somebody who's grieving the loss of a loved one, and I can take away some of that pain. You know, I can give them some relief. And to me, that's very gratifying.
Absolutely. I mean, what about, I know we don't have much time, and it's an evolved question, but have your views changed at all about organized religion?
I am not a big fan of organized religion. I feel like what I learned there taught me that I feel like it's kind of selfish, organized religion, to say, do it my way and this is the right path to follow. It's kind of a selfish attitude, and it's not right. What I discovered is that's incorrect. I am a very, very spiritual person, and in God's little sense of humor, my son, whose hand I was holding when I was struck by lightning, is now an Orthodox rabbi. And the two of us tend to butt heads quite a lot in these conversations. But I just am not a fan of organized religion. I am Jewish. I'm proud of being a Jewish person, proud of my Judaism. But as far as feeling like I have to go to services or I have to do these certain rituals, no, not at all.
Yeah, and what many people don't realize is that the seers and the prophets upon whom these organized religions were based were part of the mystical traditions in history, and they believed in communing with our ancestors and other realms of existence, so I agree that it's kind of silly to impose rules if we're all part of the divine. Why set up these boundaries? Talking with Elizabeth Crone, we just touched on some of the information in the book. It's highly recommended. It's called Changed in a Flash, One Woman's Near-Death Experience and Why a Scholar Thinks It Empowers Us All. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being with us. I hope you'll join us again, because there's a lot more to talk about.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Have a good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our global peace prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.